Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So we've been off the air a little bit, but for good reasons. We are making some enhancements to the podcast, which we're going to discuss in a second. But we wanted to give you a very special episode today. I recorded an interview with a legendary journalist from Italy, Paolo Condò, on the Italian national team, the big storylines in Serie A that I think you'll really enjoy. I was going to do it as a standalone episode, but despite the international break, quite a few things happened. So I wanted to chat with our good friend, producer, co-host, Alex Goldberg. And I want to ask you this question because you're very familiar with Ajax. And we're recording this on Wednesday. Recently, Ronaldo had an injury with Portugal, muscular injury. It sounds like he should be back in time for the match in the Champions League. But I figured I'd ask you this, that way we can also get more sense of what Ajax is all about. So Alex, you're an expert on Juve, you know Ajax quite well. Let's say hypothetically Ronaldo can't play. How much of an impact would that have? Would you think Juve would be able to eliminate Ajax even without Ronaldo?
I do, David. I still think Juve would be the favorite and would be able to move on past Ajax. However, it certainly would be more difficult because, as we all know, Ronaldo is just lifting Juve, whether it's with his play or his leadership. The way he just lifted them in the last leg in the Champions League was really extraordinary. And what he brings to the Champions League, we've talked about it, he might bring something to the Champions League that no player ever has before. But I give Juve chances for two reasons. One, they're Juve. Two, they don't have much to play for in the league, which is pretty important. So they can definitely be totally fresh for that Champions League tie. Now, if we look over to Ajax, I still give Ajax a shot with or without Ronaldo. It definitely goes up without Ronaldo. But even with Ronaldo, I give Ajax a shot. The tricky part for Ajax is, obviously, if they could choose, they'd win the Champions League over the Eredivisie. But right now, they're 5 points down in the Eredivisie, 5 points behind PSV. They actually have a game against PSV this upcoming weekend. So let's say they lose that, David, then they're 8 points down. That actually might help Ajax in the Champions League because then they can just fully focus on that Champions League tie. But let's go on the question you asked me specifically. If Juventus don't have Ronaldo, yeah, I give Juve a shot. Like I said, I think they're still the favorite in that tie, but things become a lot tougher. Matthias De Ligt, one of the top young center backs in the world, is not going to have to worry about really maybe even man-marking Ronaldo. He can just kind of be Matthias De Ligt and just take Bernardeschi, Mandzukic, Dybala, who's ever out there as they are. And I do rate Ajax's defense pretty well, actually. I really like their right back, Mazraoui. I really like their left back, Tagliafico. They got Daley Blind. So it would become a much easier assignment for them without Ronaldo. But to answer your question, yeah, I still think Juve remain the favorite if Ronaldo is out, but I think it becomes a lot closer. I think it becomes almost like a 55% to Juve, 45% to Ajax. And I said this when you asked me a couple weeks ago, David. You told me to list the three teams I'd want to avoid if I were Juve. I said Manchester City and Barcelona were kind of the obvious ones. And I said Ajax were my sneaky shout. And I totally stand by that. The one really impressive thing Ajax have are very cohesive youth players that will not be playing on Ajax much longer. Let's just put it that way. So, yeah, I can't wait for the tie. I really, really can't wait for that tie, as obviously co-host here on the Couch Lamb Pod. So obviously I'm very familiar with Juve, but as you said, I'm a pretty big fan of Ajax. So sorry, Juve fans, I will not be rooting for your team in this one. But David, obviously this is
we know you're a Milanista now, so it's okay.
There you go. And I was about to say, now Milan fans probably like me even more. But yeah, I think that's probably where I'm headed. But let's be real. David, we're in the middle. Well, now we're at the end of the international break. It was, as you said, a very eventful international break. Italy with a beautiful win yesterday. So what were just your overall takeaways from this international break?
So if you guys remember, at the start of the international break, I talked about the checklist that happens on the international break. If you've been following the sport for a while, I think you're very familiar with the types of things that tend to happen this time of year. So we have the bombastic Mino Raiola interview. Came a little bit late, but it finally did come in this week. So we can check that off. We've had a lot of transfer rumors. We can check that off the list. And then we had, you know, some backstories on how Messi and Ronaldo back in the day were close to joining other clubs. And I didn't see that many of those because those are a favorite this time during the international break. But I think the fact we didn't have that much of those is because there were so many other things that happened. Right before we recorded, we actually had a big transfer, not just the transfer rumors, or Lucas Hernandez going to Bayern Munich for 80 million. The transfer window's closed, but they announced it, you know, that it's going to be effective next season. Bayern tends to do that a lot. And that was a very interesting transfer for two reasons. A, you know, it goes to show, and we've been talking about this on the show for over a year now, the skyrocketing prices of defenders. The market, there's definitely been a correction on that. I'd say 2-3 years ago, there was the perception that defenders just were nowhere near worth what an attacker was. But I think between scarcity at the position and teams are starting to realize that not conceding goals is almost as important as scoring goals, that has changed a lot. And the other thing that was interesting about that transfer is, you know, Bayern Munich for a long time, they were very reticent to spend huge money. They've always said they didn't like to get into bidding wars and that they thought the prices of players were just getting too out of control and they didn't want to participate in that. But, you know, their very disappointing season changed that. So it was a very interesting transfer. As far as you mentioned, the Italian national team, very positive. And you'll hear some very interesting stuff from Paolo Condò, but that was recorded only after the first match, not the second. So I'll let him give you some insight on that. And the other thing that I found really interesting, a new thing that we can add to the checklist for the next international break, in Serie A especially, there's a lot of buzz on stadiums around the international break. I think it's a perfect time to talk about these things. There were some developments on Roma Stadium. There's some big delays. There's some corruption issues. It sounds like there's going to be, it definitely won't get started this year. I've been very skeptical that it'll happen at all. Our friend John Solano was very optimistic even up until a week ago, but I know today he's changed his tune on Twitter, and I can't say that I'm surprised about that. The other thing that's interesting is there's all this buzz on San Siro being demolished and Milan and Inter moving into a new stadium together. But moving out of San Siro and demolishing it. Like, I'm very skeptical about that. Maybe it's because I have, you know, strong feelings towards San Siro. To me, that's the temple of Italian football. When I think of calcio, San Siro is one of the first things that comes to mind, not just Milan and Inter, but the great games that have taken place there. Legends were made on that pitch. So I'm very skeptical. I still think at the end of the day, San Siro is going to get refurbished like we've seen a lot of other historical stadiums. You know, there isn't the athletic thing around the pitch to remove. There's everything's there for it to still be a great facility. If you've been at the stadium, you know, it's not very modern behind the scenes. I definitely think they need to upgrade it there. So I'm skeptical. I think this is the typical story that you get around the international break to keep fans engaged, get clicks on websites, sell papers. I'm going to go on record. I was very skeptical on Roma getting a stadium. Let's see if I'm right on this one as well. So an exciting international break. We're going to come back next week. We're going to touch upon a bunch of other things, but we have Serie A coming up as well. So I'm excited to talk about that. Before we get to the interview with Paolo Condò, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about why we didn't do as many episodes this week. So Alex been working on more the audio tech side of things, changing the way we put out Calcioland out to the world. I think it's going to help the show grow. I've been working a lot on the Patreon page that some of you, and I really want to thank the 15 people that signed up. So I just want to explain a little bit what that is. Alex and I really believe in Calcioland. We want to keep it a free podcast because we want more people to listen. We want it to continue growing organically. Putting it behind the paywall obviously limits you in that sense. So if you've been listening to Calcioland, very little is going to change. You're still going to have access to two episodes for free per week. If you decide to subscribe, and we have different tiers, we are going to give you a lot of value for your contribution. So for $3 a month, less than a dollar a week. You'll get the Monday episode sooner, 5-6 hours before it regularly goes out. And the Thursday episode will be an extended version of Calcio Land. So there'll be, I'd say, an extra 10 to 15 minutes of content. We really appreciate your support because that helps us pay for all the various expenses that come with Calcio Land, studio time, audio. I want to make sure Alex is compensated for all his work on it. So by doing that, you're helping us offset that. And that's a big help. For $7 a month, you get all that early access to the podcast, a longer episode. You also get at least once a quarter, a totally bonus episode of Calcio Land. We are open to suggestions. It would be something similar to the Milan special we did about a year and a half ago. So something along those lines. So you'll get at least once a quarter that. In addition to that, you'll get at least 2 blog posts a week from me. Today I wrote about the stadiums. So you'll get something like that at least twice a week. You'll also get some commentary during the Serie A matches, stuff that I normally would tweet. I'll put it on there. And you'll also be able to ask 10 questions a month. And you can have those answered in any format you want. If you want to use it for your own content, some of you guys that write, you can take it. That's yours to keep. We'll still obviously answer questions from everyone on the podcast, but this is a little bit different. You can DM me and I'll answer the way you want. So that's a tier for $7, and I'll make sure you more than get your money's worth for that. And then for the tier that we have for those of you that do content, that have podcasts and articles, and that's $20 a month. And I know that sounds like a lot, but it's very hard to get your work out there. I've been blessed to have a very big platform, a lot of followers that are really engaged with the content that I talk about, not just my own. So for that, you'll get at least 3 times a month. It won't be just a retweet. I'll plug your article or podcast. If you have a podcast, I'll come on at least once as a guest to help that, and I'll help you network to get other guests. Now, you know, be realistic. I haven't had Di Marzio on the podcast. It was a choice because I wanted to do my own thing. So don't expect someone like that. But a lot of the guests that you hear on Calcio Land and others, I can help you that. So if you're looking to grow your content, trust me, that is a very small price to pay to really get a lot of more attention. And we'll also throw in a gift. Alex and I are working on having some Calcio Land stuff, and we'll send you some for that as well. So I appreciate your support. I know you guys love the podcast. I love doing it. I really believe in it. But it is a fairly expensive proposition, and I'm trying to offset that. And by doing that, we are going to give you more content. But enough of that. You guys don't really want to hear that. You are here for Calcio content, and it really doesn't get any better than Paolo Condò. We've had him on a few months ago. To me, I'm very humbled that he wanted to come back on the podcast. That also speaks to the quality of the program that we put out. So I think that's really going to cure your international break blues. We will be back probably early next week with our regular episode, and you'll see more of the patron stuff. So thanks for your support. I am joined for the second time on the podcast with a legend of Italian journalism, and I don't use this word lightly. And we have Paolo Condò back. We had him on a few months ago when the excellent book, Totti's Autobiography, for which he is the co-author, Un Capitano, came out. We talked about it at length last time. Paolo is also one of the writers on Gazzetta dello Sport, where he writes some in-depth profiles of a lot of figures in Italian football. And for those of you familiar with Italian TV, he is also a pundit on Sky Sport, where they discuss all the big stories on Serie A. So Paolo, it's a real honor to have you back on Calcio Land. Bentornato.
Ciao, David. Good morning or good evening at everybody. It's a real pleasure for me. I have a nice remember of our first talk about Totti's book, and I like very much. I appreciate you call me for another story, another question and answer about Italian football.
Well, I'm really humbled by that. So thank you so much. So I want to talk to you first about the Azzurri. This is the international break. You know a lot of figures in Italian football, but you know I've read your work for a while, and I have a feeling But Roberto Mancini is someone that you know quite well. And I get the feeling you kind of like him a lot. So in a recent article for Gazzetta dello Sport, you talked about Mancini's return to Coverciano, which is where the Italian national team does the retreats. Mancini was a player on the Azzurri, maybe didn't have the career on the Azzurri someone of his talent deserved, but he's back as the coach. So the commissario tecnico is really quite a unique role. So let me ask you, so as someone who knows Mancini really well, what are the qualities that he has that you think are making him a good fit as the Azzurri manager?
Mancini is an international manager. He won in Italy. He won in England. He won in Turkey. And he trained also in Russia. And he's very modern manager. He knows very well that in modern football, in these years of modern football, quality win overall. Quality and more, and if you are able to create a game system in which 6, 7, 8 quality players can play together, you can build a winning team. But the first thing that I know in Roberto that is a very old friend, Roberto, and since he was a player, you know, he was a trainer, a coach on the field. All his manager always said this about him, that he was the real, not only the captain, but also the tactical mind inside the field, inside the squad. And so I think that he knows that in modern football, the old Italian style, the old Italian lesson of a lot of defenders to hold the draw and trying to find the goal, score a goal in one or two chances you can create. And Roberto is not of that kind of manager. And so I think that this is, you must remember that he was a very gifted player. So he trained as years ago, he played quality overall.
Very interesting. And yeah, I do remember Mancini quite well as a player with Gianluca Vialli at the great Sampdoria. So let me ask you about, you know, obviously you've covered, I think, 7 or 8 World Cups. You know the Italian national team really, really well. You know, you mentioned that Mancini's all about the quality and being able to get the best out of his best players and creating a system for that. Based on those qualities or anything else, is there maybe a recent or even an older CT of the Italian national team that Mancini kind of reminds you of?
There is an historical thing that, in my opinion, could be very important. He remembers me, Marcello Lippi, because Marcello Lippi arrived after the Trapattoni period that, in my opinion, was one of the darkest period of our national team. Because Trapattoni, I repeat, this is my opinion, because a lot of people, every time you mention Trapattoni, said, oh, fantastic, exceptional. And I think that Trapattoni arrived at the Italian team too old and unable to understand the change that were developing in international football. And so when Marcello Lippi, after Trapattoni arrived, in my opinion, he changed and he bring Italian football and brought it in the new century. Roberto Mancini arrived more or less in the same situation. after another of our darkest period, terrifying, you know, Ventura, and Italy didn't qualify for the World Cup, that for a country as my country is a disaster that you can describe 100% which kind of disaster. You know, you live in Italy too, and so you know what it means for Italy to be out for at Russia. And of course, I hope that this putting Mancini close to Lippi could be lucky for him, because we all know what Marcello Lippi was able to achieve with the Italian national team. But I think that more or less it's the same situation. A young team coming from defeats that has a great anger, and they want to make history.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the team that Mancini has put together so far. I think the first thing that stands out is how he has built a midfield. We know what it's going to be. He's used it for a few matches in a row. You compare that to Ventura, who kind of reinvented the midfield in the biggest match of the playoffs against Sweden. So we have Jorginho and Verratti, who on paper could seem like similar players, and that's worked really well. And he launched Nicolò Barella, who also had a great match yesterday. And we know how much faith Mancini had in Zaniolo, selecting him even before he played for Roma. So the midfield looks well on his way. The attack, on the other hand, they could really use someone like Vialli or Vieri to help that attack. What do you think is going to happen with the attack? What do you think Mancini is going to do with that?
So, first of all, I want to come back to the midfield. Because, as you noticed, Verratti and Jorginho are very similar players. In my opinion, we have saw the first qualifying match, the victory against Finlandia. It was not a difficult match. And when this team will be built, I think that in match as yesterday match, only Verratti will play of the two defensive midfielders. Only Verratti, because we need another midfielder box to box. That could be Zaniolo. So I hope in a midfield made from Verratti, Zaniolo, and Barella, or Pellegrini, the AS Roma guy that was not fit in these days, but I think that he can play in this kind of midfield, and saving the two defensive midfielder, saving for match against France, against Germany, against the big team, against England, when it's better that you protect your defense. If you put another midfielder as Zaniolo with Barella, another offensive midfielder as Zaniolo, so it's okay. You can take Bernardeschi in the three up front. And Chiesa, of course, that was not fit in this match, and the center and the forward. Ken made a good first match. He scored a goal too. I think that Mancini will always give a look at Balotelli.
So let me ask you about the difesa. And, you know, you're a historian of the Italian national team, and Chiellini's been, you know, a big part of Juve recently, played his 500th game at the club. You know, he became an important player on the Azzurri after the World Cup. And there's been a lot of great Italian defenders in my lifetime and even more in your lifetime. So let me ask you, where do you kind of rank Chiellini? Where do you see him as far as the great Italian defenders of the past 40 years?
The strange thing is that he is making his best season, I think, because the season is really fantastic at 34, more or less, yes, 34 year. And I think he is not of the same level of our historical Maldini, Baresi, and Nesta, and Cannavaro, but is immediately after them. If they are at the 10th cycle, the top, the paradise of defenders, he is at the 9th, only one under.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Pietro Vierkovud, and who I think is one of the most underrated Italian defenders. You never hear him mentioned, so I kind of see him in that here. So let me ask you about Juve in the Champions League. So we had that really impressive comeback against Atletico Madrid. You know, you're a voter in the Ballon d'Or, so you're not just an expert on Italian football. How do you rate Juve's chances in this Champions League?
They survived a terrible situation. And this is always important. Because if you are able to survive at it, you know that you can achieve everything. So it's a very nice situation. It's a war about football tactics school, and I think that Juventus have his chance to win the cup.
So let's talk a little bit about Max Allegri. You're obviously cover Italian football on Sky, Gazzetta, you know really well. And, you know, I get the sense that outside of Italy, with non-Juve fans, Max Allegri is actually held in a higher regard than he is maybe within the Juve bubble. So let me ask you your impression of Max Allegri as a whole. As a manager, and are there any maybe previous Italian manager, not necessarily Italian manager, that he reminds you of?
This is a very, very easy question, because this kind of coach worked with me at Sky Sport in the night of Champions League. That is Fabio Capello. Fabio Capello is in fact, he loves very much Allegri in this kind of job. He's a manager that put the players in the right place where they can give 100% of their value. He didn't think to build a game system good for everybody, as Guardiola, for example. But it depends from the quality of the players, the kind of football to develop. And so Fabio Capello loves him very much because he sees him young on the bench.
Very interesting comparison. Now let me ask you about another manager, and this is Rino Gattuso, who I think has had a very good season at Milan. I know this is the international break after the loss in the derby, so maybe prisoners of the moment see him a little bit differently. But I want to ask you about him, because recently on your Twitter account, you described him as uno sportivo, which I have a hard time translating to English. It's really like someone who's fair and isn't afraid to give credit to the opponent. That's kind of how I kind of interpret that. But tell our listeners, what you think about Rino Gattuso as a manager, and why that compliment, uno sportivo, is something that means so much to you.
I love very much his approach to the game. He is very honest. After in the interviews after a match, he never complained about the referee, but he always talked first about what his men, what luck to his men to win a match, and what luck to him to build a winning team. This is my I love very much. It's maybe that in English the best word is Olympic. He is an Olympic spirit that is very different from 90% of other football manager, and I love this about him. Speaking about his qualities as a manager, he is a young manager, and so of course he's not perfect. He has to learn a lot, but he train a team, a club that for economical reason, for financial reason, I think can't win next year. And they are developing a strategy, buying players that will arrive at their top in 2 or 3 years. And this is a good strategy, I think. And maybe that of course, he has to gain the Champions League place for next year, because it's crucial for the growth of the team. But if he will be able to do this, he must remain, because as his players, Gattuso too, as a manager, could arrive at his top in 3 or 2, 3, 4 years.
Well said. I agree. You know, Milan has a young team, Squadra Giovane, young manager, and they definitely seem to follow him. And he's dealt with so much adversity between ownership changes, injuries, new players. So I definitely agree with you. Let's talk a little bit about the other side of Milano. And this is the Mauro Icardi situation. So he came back to practice a few days ago. Inter is in the same positions in the standings they were before he left. So let me ask you, how much of an impact do you think his return can have on Inter? Because they're battling for a Champions League spot. So both on the pitch and off the pitch, what type of impact do you think his return will have?
It was a bomb in the dressing room. It was a bomb in the dressing room that conditioned the whole season of Inter. And maybe that this... cheese fire, because it's not a deal, it's a cheese fire. This cheese fire for the last 10 matches of the season will save the Champions League place for Inter. Of course, the speech is the same that I made for Milan. It's crucial for the future. And but this was a bomb. And I gave 90% of the responsibilities to the player, not to the club. To the player and, of course, you know, to his wife and manager.
So let me ask you, you know, Inter for years under Massimo Moratti, I think they would have handled this situation, you know, pretty differently. Massimo Moratti really was all about taking care of his star players. And it seems that between Suning and Beppe Marotta coming for Juve, that's changed a lot the way Inter would handle a situation like this. Do you think Icardi is definitely going to leave Inter next season? Or do you see any scenario where he comes back next season to the club?
No, I'm pretty sure that he will play another team, because what happened is too dramatic to have a deal. And I think that now the new executive of Inter must sign the best trade possible. I have read that one of the possible on the table is an exchange with Dybala. I think that Dybala with Lautaro Martinez, that is one of the best surprise in this Serie A season, could work. I think that they could work, but surely next season you will have a new front line in the Inter team.
So So last calcio question for you. Last time we were on, we talked, of course, about your great book on Totti. Again, if you haven't read it, it's called Un Capitano. Fantastic. Not just, you know, the stories on the pitch, but I really enjoyed reading so much about Totti's life on it. And since we had you on, we had the explosion of Nicolò Zaniolo at Roma. And I know some of them have compared him to Totti, which kind of scares me a little bit, especially for Roma. But you know better than me the situation there. So let me ask you, A, is Zaniolo the real deal? Is all the promise something that you think he's going to be able to fulfill? And how do you see his career progressing in, say, the next 2 or 3 years?
He's a different player. It's incredible that other teams, as Fiorentina and Inter, lose him, think that he was not special player. He's very special. I think that Mancini made the correct comparison. He told me that in 2 years of good development, he could become something similar. He can become something similar to Paul Pogba. So a midfielder that is technically gifted and physically dominant. And I think that he will sign the first good contract of his life with the AS Roma, because it seems incredible to me that another bigger club lose him. And then it will depend from Roma. If Roma will become a normal competitor for Scudetto and Champions League and so on, he will remain, he will stay in Rome as Totti or as De Rossi. But he is not a Roma born. And so if Roma will remain a team that have the Champions League place as a top target, he will change the club.
Paolo, I can't thank you enough. Now, I want to ask you just one quick NBA question before I let you go. I know you're a huge basketball fan. So let me ask you, who's your favorite NBA player ever and why?
Ever. If you say ever, I can only answer Michael Jordan, of course. Because in 1992, I was so lucky to see him twice. First in game two, maybe, of the final against Portland, because the Italian national team was in tournée for the Youth Cup. And I was in Chicago the day in which at the Chicago Dome was played the match, and I was able to find an accreditation to enter the dome. I have it was a fantastic night. And second time in Barcelona for the Olympic Games, I saw the dream team, the real dream team. So Michael Jordan is a part of my sky.
What a story. Well, Paolo, next time you're on, I promise we'll talk more about the NBA. In the meantime, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. Always a pleasure to chat with you, and your professoressa d'inglese would be very proud of you today, for sure.
Thank you very much.
And that's our show for the day. As always, thank you so much for everyone who sent us questions. You guys are the best co-writers that I could possibly have. But on top of your help with the content, we also rely on you guys being the marketing department of Calcioland. This is a completely free podcast. If you enjoy what you hear, please help us grow. Please tweet links to the episode. I love seeing people, when someone asks, you know, what podcast do you like? So many of you respond, Calcioland. That means a lot to me. And also, please leave a review on iTunes if you haven't already. It takes 3 seconds to leave a 5-star review. If you leave comments, Alex and I read them all, take them to heart, try to implement the suggestions. There's really no better recommendation than something coming from our listeners. So thanks again for all your support, and we look forward to chatting with you next time.